Okay, I'm recording now. Okay. So last time we tried to do this, I was really high on ketamine, so we kind of didn't really do it. And also, I've got work in like 30 to 40 minutes. These motherfuckers are going to interrupt me. But, you know, until then. Okay, so I guess I'm going to recap everything we talked about last time. Waffle, you were there, right? You just weren't talking like a little bitch?
Correct.
Okay. Fucking Christ. Okay, so in the first recording thing, we went over the basis of NetherWiki and how it was the framing story, the wiki that you use to view all the shit, along with the Rosewood transmissions, of which Hayoki the Wolf is part. There are these radio transmissions. The wiki has articles on the different radio transmissions, and the wiki has an article on this book called Hayoki the Wolf. But what's interesting about Hayoki the Wolf is that it is referenced in every one of the transmissions at least once. There's something special about it. Now, last time we talked about a little bit of the first story arc. Not even story arc, storyline. Because there's four main storylines. There's Series A, with the wolves going into this dark, haunted forest and slowly being picked off. There's Series B, with the rabbits in the war in Antioch that's got too many rabbits and not enough food. There's Series C, which is the one rabbit majordomo in a city of wolves desperately trying to maintain control. And Series D, with Patches of the Hyena and the deer that claims it needs to be transported across two continents to give birth to the Messiah. And if anyone's listening to this without having gone to the first part, you're not going to have a fucking clue what I'm talking about. Okay. I'm also in the mood to just, like, get this fucking over with, because we already talked about this before I disassociated too hard yesterday, so... Okay, so, and feel free to interrupt if you have questions or I forgot something awful. So, after the third chapter, we left off with Hayoki and the other wolves going into the Deadwood. We now cut to a completely different storyline. And we cut to a young rabbit named Mutz waking up because there's some water dripping on his face. Ugh, the typing really makes it.
Sorry.
That's okay, we had hookah noises in the first one. Water dripping on his face. He wakes up and there's just water on the ceiling in a stain that kind of looks like a face looking down at him. And he thinks to himself as he's waking up that maybe it's from the surface, but he realizes in the back of his mind it's not going to be from the surface because he's so far down below ground right now that he's not even anywhere close to the surface. He's never even seen the surface before. And we describe basically where he is. And the smells of, like, you know, rabbit droppings and dust and really not that much else. He's at the bottom of some sort of underground facility. There's different rooms he can go through, but it's very clear that he's a prisoner. And this is a facility that's not like just something like dug out of the ground like a rabbit would make. It's something that's much older and much more pristine. And what we'll call forerunner once you learn about that word in the story. But he's wandering around and he's woken up because of a scent he smells. He smells a scent and he hears a dripping, and he thinks at first the dripping is the water dripping on him that woke him up. But it wasn't the dripping that woke him up. There's a different dripping and a different scent that's like kind of pungent but also alluring, and it keeps him going. He's looking for it. And as we watch him go through these rooms, we describe who he is and like what he thinks of this place. And it is very clear that he's young. He's a child, basically. And he's also incredibly deformed. We talk about how his spine juts out beyond his back and how his limbs are too long and stretched. He's just way bigger and more obtuse than he should be. And his jaws comes out and his teeth come out way too far. And he actually has to wear an apparatus on his face to keep his like skull in place. And when he was born, he was told that his mother died of fright. And he doesn't really interact with anyone, except for this warden. But it's clear he really cares about this warden. And he talks about, or he thinks about the interactions he's had with this warden. About how, you know, the only time he ever interacted with snow was when the warden brought it down for him. But it's clear for the audience, at least, that this is a kind of fucked up relationship. He's not allowed out of this place. It's almost like a Stockholm syndrome thing. He follows the scent until he finds an elevator. An elevator that's really not supposed to be there. It's not supposed to be that far down. He's not supposed to be able to leave this place, but there it is. He's staring at the lift. Think of like a Dark Souls-style lift. Because he is a rabbit. He walks on all fours. But rabbits didn't make this place. And he's a little hesitant at first, but he figures that maybe he's in a dream or something. So he goes on the lift and he activates it, and it starts rising up. And as it rises up, he's kind of terrified at first, really tense, but he can't help but be curious and look over to see what's around him. And as he rises up, you see the inside of, I almost want to call it a honeycomb structure of layers of this huge underground facility. It's a warren. They call it a rabbit warren, but this is clearly not made by rabbits. You can also think in terms of like maybe that underground section in Elden Ring, but that doesn't really do it justice either. As he lifts up this lift, he basically has this wide-eyed view of all the different layers and all the different creatures that live on those layers. And they're all rabbits, right? But as we're about to find out, they live very differently depending on which layer they live on. It's actually a very kind of fucked-up society, very dystopian in a lot of ways. And also very totalitarian. It's like 1984 with rabbits. And he's amazed by this. He's never seen this shit before. He's never even really left the bottom layer. And he still thinks to himself that he's dreaming, but he really wants to find this scent. And he knows this gains stronger and stronger the more he goes up. And eventually, he goes up almost to the very top of the facility. He goes up into this room, or wanders into this room. And he realizes that this is a very special place. He's in this very broad, kind of big-ass hall of a room. And it's well-decorated. And there are places for people, or in this case, rabbits, to sit, and places for them to speak. It's kind of almost like a courtroom. And he realizes that this is the this is basically where the council that controls the entire government interacts, right here. He looks up at the ceiling and he sees this kick-ass stained glass window at top. And there's snow on it. This is the closest he's ever been to snow. He can see the snow on the window. It's amazing for him. And he finds the source of the scent, too, because the light through the window goes down, and he sees, in the middle of the room, a flower, which he's also never seen before. But he reads a lot, so he knows what these things are. Or at least he thinks he does. But as he gets closer, he realizes that this isn't a flower that belongs to this world. It's a rose, which doesn't exist in this universe. And he's, like, very confused and curious about it. And you'll learn later that he has dreams like this all the time. But they're not quite dreams. And as he gets closer, the scent becomes overpowering. And he sees that underneath the flower is a puddle. A red puddle. And as he gets closer, he realizes that it's dripping. The dripping he hears is from the flower. The petals are dripping into the puddle. In fact, the puddle is being made by the petals. And he gets closer and he looks at this beautiful flower. But he realizes that this dripping water is blood. And I didn't mention this last time, but the reason this is important in the story is because a bloody flower, or a flower that's dripping blood, is actually the emblem of the Wolves of Weston. But okay. You'll learn that later. It's a premonition. Anyway, a voice, a very angry voice from behind, startles him, and he jumps. He turns around and jumps back, and he's afraid he crushed a flower, but there's no flower to begin with. And he's looking at this very angry, very big rabbit in a uniform who's fucking furious with him, asking what he's doing there, you little monster. And he tries to, like, kind of yell and run away. The rabbit catches him on his collar and, like, yanks him back and breaks the collar in the process. And then angrily grabs him and, like, starts pulling him back. Now remember, like, in this universe, we have, they're all, like, feral animals, right? Except that some of them are way more feral than others, as you're really going to see in this story arc. This rabbit who's giving him shit, Vox, has the ability to pick up objects with his paws, like most of the upper echelon rabbits do in this universe, because, or in this society, because if you can't, like, work, then you're not really good to anyone, and you're just going to go stay in the lower quadrants and starve to death. And this guy is clearly not one of them. They're all on fours, though. They're still all on all fours. So he pulls this motherfucker back into the lift, making sure no one can see, and brings him down. And then brings him back to his room, or it's really a cell, and throws him into it. By the way, you're going to encounter me saying, oh shit, I forgot that part about 50 billion times in the story, and I forgot to mention something. When he first wakes up, we describe what the room he is in is. And it's a very dark room. The entire place is dark and dungy. In this world, at least in this city, there aren't any real lights. Instead, there's this gas that comes in through the vents, and the gas itself is luminous. So there's only one vent up above his room, in the very middle, and the gas, like a fog, literally comes down and lights around it, and then, like, kind of, like, scoots off like a fog does, you know, like a fog machine does, on the ground. And as he's thrown into the room, he backs up into the corner, which is what he likes to do. He likes to be in the dark. And Vox, the rabbit, closes the door and locks it. Pauses because Mutt's, like, kind of crying, whimpering, says, Vox, I'm sorry. And Vox looks at him. And he can't see him because he's in the dark, but he does see his eyes. And they are not a rabbit's eyes. And they terrify him. And he opens his mouth to say something, but doesn't really muster anything. So he just kind of, like, walks away angrily. And we cut back to him when he's in the elevator going back up, just kind of calmly looking at a stain on the floor of the elevator and thinking to himself that, you know, we really need to clean up this place more. This entire city needs to be cleaned up. And the reason that it's kind of shitty is because people don't give a shit about it. And he's going to get some of his boys to come in and clean it up. In fact, he's going to clean up the entire lower layer of the Warren. You know, like, it could be a good team building exercise. And he's talking about all this stuff in his head and all these plans he has. And how he's going to clean this thing up. But he's really ignoring the fact that he just, like, tortured and kidnapped. Or not kidnapped, and kind of brutalized a defenseless child. And he's holding the collar in his paw still. And as he looks at the stain, he doesn't do anything. But his fist just tightens on the collar. And now we're following Vox around the Warren. And he goes back to his house. It's not really a house. It's more like a room. And it's not really a room. It's about the size of two closets. You don't have a whole lot of room in this place. But he at least has his own sleeping quarters, where he has his son and daughter. Although when he gets there, he realizes his daughter isn't there. And his son is still asleep. But before he does that, oh fuck, I forgot. When we cut to him, like, going back there, he just goes to his bathroom and just kind of, like, scrubs his fucking face. Specifically, he wants to scrub away the smell of Mutt's, of this fucked up rabbit. But he can't really get rid of it. And he looks at himself in the mirror, and he looks at how fucking old he is. And he makes some comments that, like, it makes sense in the storyline, but I'm not gonna get into. But basically, the thought he has is how, like, they're all so fucking old in this place now. And he doesn't recognize himself in the mirror anymore. He's been down here for so long. So he leaves, and he kind of, like, strands out his clothing. He's wearing a vest and nothing else. Clothing is worn in this universe, but it's mostly for decoration. It depends on the species. And he sees his son, who's, like, a teenager, sleeping on a bed, and wakes him up and says, hey, you know, like, we have this early sylphlay. This early, like, meeting/lunch we're having. You know, like, wake the fuck up. Now, where's your sister? Go get your sister. And he says he doesn't know where his sister is, but Vox tells him, like, go get her, get ready. And then leaves, and then immediately the kid falls back asleep. I mentioned the word sylphlay. There's actually a lot of words from Watership Down that get used in this story, specifically with the rabbits, because Watership Down is a part of the story. Watership Down is one of the artifacts from Rosewater, their version of Rosewood. See, like, this whole book is one of the pieces of Rosewood, the Rosewood transmissions, and it's being shown on Netherwiki, embedded in an article about itself, which is itself a part of the article, or linked to from the article of Rosewood. But in the lore of Heyoki the Wolf, which you don't really get to learn about until later, but I'm spoiling it, they had their own version of the Rosewood transmissions they call Rosewater. And so they only know of humanity through the Rosewood artifact, or Rosewater artifacts, one of which is Watership Down. And I'm sure that sounds schizophrenic and insane, but it'll make sense. Just pretend you're, like, learning Rust or something.
Sure.
Anyway, so Vox walks off and goes to a different room. He's walking through a hallway and kind of like getting a little more tense and nervous. He stops at this big ass door and he kind of like straightens his vest and like makes sure he's all like nice and tidy, takes a deep breath, and then walks in. And he walks in to find some other rabbits sitting in an office just talking. And one of them is at a desk, and his name is Rex, and he's going to be one of the main characters of the story arc. And it's clear that he's in charge. In fact, he's not just in charge of this room. He basically runs the military of this entire facility. What's left of it, anyway, because as you're going to find out, they're kind of on their last legs. But he's kind of cocky and surprisingly young and well-groomed and also kind of aloof. And hi, quite a few times, as we're going to find out soon. And he greets Rex, very friendly and charismatic, but also kind of implying, or he greets Vox, friendly and charismatic, but also kind of implying Vox was supposed to be there. And Vox apologizes and says there was kind of a, something he had to deal with. And, like, he has the collar in his hands and, like, puts it in his vest, but Rex sees it, and Rex knows that that's what he's talking about and just drops the subject. And they get back to the matter at hand, which is that Rex wants to go down and address the Prowls, who you're about to see, before they have the Sylphlay thing. And his second and third in command are telling him that's a really bad fucking idea. Which Vox agrees. He says, well, the Prowls have been very restless lately. But then Rex says, oh, well, that's just even more reason for us to go down there and, like, you know, show them that we care. And there's more dialogue. His secretary, basically, Nars, says in a kind of familiar tone, like, why are you even asking us if you're just going to disregard what we say? But it becomes very obvious that everyone is familiar with each other because they've just been down here for so fucking long. They've had entire generations kind of live and die down here. In fact, as you find out later in the story, Rex has just been making up new military ranks so he can keep promoting people because, like, he's ran out of ranks to, like, promote people to. Yes. This is basically a military outfit that retreated from a battle and then, like, never went back to their home country because there's no home country anymore. They're just in the middle of fucking nowhere, living off the last of their days. And, like, kind of like they have a civilian government that they protect, but they're basically also kind of the government now. Anyway, the Prowls, which they're referring to, just refer to the lowest class of rabbits, which, as you're going to see, are, like, they range from dumb to almost completely feral. And to remind you guys, I don't even know if I got into this fucking in the first section. Okay, so the premise of Heyoki the Wolf, one of them, is that you have these anthropomorphic animals that were, like, super anthropomorphic back in the day. In fact, we think of animals in our universe as starting off dumb and kind of evolving into higher life forms like us. But in their universe, they started off as these godlike entities, and they've been slowly degrading over time and what they call the rot. I think I talked about this with you at the hookah bar, right, Winter?
Yes.
Yeah. So one problem in this world is that these animals are slowly becoming stupider and stupider until they become like the animals that we know in our world. They are losing their humanity. And eventually many of them are just becoming completely feral, they call it, and are just like dumb animals. By the way, I don't know if I really explained to you, Winter, that this concept of the rot is affecting the entire universe. It's not just, it's not just the animals. Like, the whole world is getting fucked up. Like, you see, sometimes the sun rises in the west and sets in the east. Rivers flow upstream, and like weird distortions in time and space. I mean, you already know about the Deadwood, this like crazy haunted forest that's spreading like a cancer across the world. But you're going to also see something called Apocalypse Land in a completely different place called Westworld, where it seems like even time itself is starting to degrade and die. And things are just becoming almost like abstract thoughts. And like these kind of holes and tears in reality are just popping up in different manifestations all across this world. And terrifying the residents of it. Anyway. So, Rex decides that he's going to go see the Prowls, and he's taking everyone with him, all five rabbits in the room. I'm not even going to get into the other ones right now because you're going to learn about them later. I don't want to overload you. Because, like, this is like four chapters so far that we're talking about. Speaking of which, we're about to cut to a new character, which is Frux, who is a young rabbit who's not quite as young looking as Mutz, but like still very much a young teenager, who is actually Vox's adopted daughter, the one he was talking about just now, although she's not where she's supposed to be. She's on the very outskirts of her her sector of the realm, or of the Warren, of the facility. And she is, fuck, I hope no one fucking messaged me. Okay, cool. I'm probably going to be torn away, like, in no time at all, in which case I'll just come back after this fucking work. Oh, motherfucker. They literally just messaged me. Okay, that's going to end it for now. We'll do part two after I'm done with work. Thank you for listening. Okay. Is anyone talking? Oh.
Hey. I told him to join Game Time. And
okay, I told him to do that.
Hi.
I was looking away when he joined.
You guys are being recorded again. I am so desperate right now, I'm drinking fucking beer. Do you know what the worst part about not doing drugs is?
What?
It's not being high. Sober.
Exactly.
Oh, my goodness.
It's like what Tom says. He doesn't want to do drugs all the time, but then he won't be able to get high.
Welcome back to the hell that everyone else has to live.
It's fucking awful that I can't enjoy ketamine anymore. It's like, what the fuck? All right, so I just finished up work, which was its own special hell. Are you guys ready? Sorry, what's up, dude?
I was going to say, you guys go ahead and everything. I'm going to drop out because, like, I wasn't here the first time. And, like, I'm just sitting here playing games. So.
Yeah, no problem. See you around.
You guys have a good night.
We will.
Later.
Fucking finish my 13-hour workday. Let me just grab a coat because it's fucking cold in here. I don't know if the audience knows this, but I'm actually incredibly poor, so I will be.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Dear audience, he's lying.
He's poor.
That was such a stereotypical door noise.
Door underscore open dot mb3.
Yeah, so what are the odds we're still being recorded now?
99%.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Kind of lies are you guys spreading in my absence? Where the fuck did I put that beer? Motherfucker.
Honestly, I had some sparkling white grape juice this evening and I was listening to the story and I almost fell asleep, so that practically did it for me.
Oh, good to know that my writing makes you fall asleep. Shit, I'll be right back.
No, I mean, I got off work. I'm comfortable.
Yeah. He's just being
fucked. Okay, third time's a charm. Just gotta finish up this shit, and then it's Balatro, baby. All right. We should watch, like, Mystery Science Theater or something afterwards. Or, like, more X-Files.
Sure.
We'll do more ketamine. Okay, so. Oh, it tastes like ass. Where did I leave off last time?
Going to...
Oh, yeah, they're going to see the Proles.
Meet the people.
Yeah, the Proles.
The Poppers, is that what you called them?
Proles, P-R-O-L-E-S. Proles. It's a term from 1984.
Okay.
So that's specific for the rabbits in this. What's up?
Go to the proles. Vote to the proles.
It's proletariat. It's not from 1984.
Yeah, but they shorten it in 19. I know what it means, fucking proletariat. Fucking capitalist pig. Anyway. Okay, yeah. So we're actually cut to a different character. The young Frux. This is probably the start of another chapter, and she is in a higher up Warren area sector, I guess you'd call it. I actually have a name for it, but I forgot because it's been so fucking long since I did this story. But yeah, she is in a much nicer place. However, she actually comes from one of the shittier places. She is in a Warren called Styx, or a sector called Styx. Which is its, like, own little city above, like, directly above another city called Lythe, I think. I have to look back at the names. They're all based on the rivers of the underworld in Greek mythology. Anyway, she's actually looking into this, and she's sketching. Although she's not really using paper. She's basically using, like, a chalkboard. But she's sketching someone who's down below. She's just watching, like, this rabbits, like, move about their lives down below in the city she grew up in and is no longer a part of. And she's particularly sketching this one really scary, fucked-up-looking rabbit that's, like, very clearly feral-ish and is not, like, really talking. But one thing that's particular about him is that, unlike the other rabbits, his eyes are on the side of his head, more like a rabbit, like a real rabbit. He doesn't have that anthropomorphic feature. And this is something that's happening to them. They're just, like, losing certain features like that. Like, all the other rabbits have eyes, like, forward, because they have, like, 3D vision. You know, like people. Like, you would think of as anthropomorphic animals. And so yeah. That's something that I play with in this novel. But she has her own thoughts, and, like, I'm basically describing her character in the scene. But she gets her train of thought interrupted because she sees a commotion. She sees this basically this door open up on this upper level, and Rex come out and start to address the residents of the city. Which we're going to find out he's really not supposed to do, because he runs the military and he likes to act like he's part of the civilian government, which he is sworn to protect. But he really isn't, and he's going to piss off a lot of people because he keeps doing this. But he goes out and starts addressing them. Although they are super fucking pissed off at him immediately. And when I say pissed off, I mean, like, they are throwing shit at him and screaming at him. Yelling things about, like, not having enough rations and their children being stolen away. And, like, the people around him, Nars, even Vox, are just kind of horrified by this. This is a fucking angry mob that looks like it wants to kill him. And he's just fucking chilling, just, like, smiling there, waving as they're fucking screaming obscenities at him. In fact, like, a piece of shit just, like, flies into his face and, like, makes, like, the people, you know, his secretary cringe. And he just is, like, smiling and gently, like, rubs it off as the rabbits down below laugh. And they kind of, like, get all out of them as he addresses them. And he calls them his friends. He keeps saying, my friends, why are you acting this way? My friends, my friends. And individual shouts come up from the rabbits down below, talking about, you know, the rations, the missing rations. Like, people mention, as I said, their children being stolen away. Basically, like, there being too many of them and not having enough room. And, like, missing, like, very basic resources. And he's like, he talks to them. He just, like, tries to calm them. And basically, like, sells them bullshit, but he does a really good job at it. Talks about how, like, actually the rations haven't been cut. You're getting quite a bit more than you used to. Saying that the kids who have been removed were done so for their own safety. I'll have to go back to look at the dialogue to see, but I do a pretty good job, I think, of selling it. And plus, these rabbits are fucking stupid. And a lot of their interactions are almost like needy children. In fact, one of the things he does to, like, kind of give them a carrot is say that this rabbit holiday, which is, like, celebrated every year, is coming up soon, and, like, for what he knows, like, they're all gonna get double rations, you know? It's, like, it's only, like, a few months away, which they seem pretty happy about. But, eventually, weirdly enough, when I say they act like children, one of them yells out, like, tell us a story. And then, oh, fuck. I totally fucking forgot something. God damn it, motherfucker. Okay, so you have to understand this. He's basically on this platform above them all, right? They can't get to him. He's still technically in the upper Warren sector, upper layer, right? He's looking down at them and talking. And one thing they say to him is that one of them yells out as he's trying to convince him to chill, like, you don't care about us. And, like, he gets really fucking angry about that. Just, like, on his face, you can see it. And he orders, like, the person next to him, one of his bodyguards, like, lower the platform. I want to go down there and talk to them. And they say, like, that's really not a good idea. And he says, do it anyway. Like, and so they lower the platform, and the platform goes down, and now he's in the city with these rabbits. And, like, you know, he's, like, just walking forward, and they're walking, they're kind of, like, backed up away from him, because he's got his bodyguards up front, which are fucking huge and kind of scary. And he just, like, jumps on top of something that's, like, on the ground, probably some debris, and then he starts talking to them while he's down there, which is one of the reasons that they kind of calm down, because he's, like, first of all, he's fucking big and scary like they all are. But he's also, like, willing to come down there with shit on his face and talk to them about it. It's after that level of dialogue that, like, they kind of forget about the issues they're asking him about and ask him for a story. Because, like, they also realize that, like, he's the fucking head of the security. And it's not like he can do that much anyway, supposedly. Like, he's, it's like fucking asking, like, the fucking, I guess the commander-in-chief in America is the president, so it doesn't really make any sense. But, you know, it's like asking a four-star general why our taxes are increased, right? Anyway, he does start to tell them a story, a very famous story in rabbit lore. And the story is not really important right now, although it's very interesting, like everything I write. But, no reaction. Yeah, huh? But one thing that's very apparent is when he says certain words, like wolves and foxes, like there's like grunts and anger. And like almost fear coming from the crowd. It's almost like a curse word. In fact, you're going to discover that it is a fucking curse word in their society. Calling someone a wolf is like a very big slur. And he mentions, intertwined with the story, he talks about a little bit about the history of this warren and about how they fled from a city called Pylos from the wolves and the foxes. And alludes to being betrayed by the foxes. And he's telling the story, and they're kind of getting into it, and so is the audience, because it's some good exposition, but one of the rabbits just starts fucking another rabbit, like, right there in front of them. And so he kind of, like, nods to his secretary, Nars, like, maybe cut them out, like, or at least get them out of here. And so he goes down, and he tries to kind of push them on top of, off each other, and he says, like, you know, breeding has a... moratorium. You know, there's a ban on reproduction, basically, for them. And this rabbit just fucking snarls and fucking slashes at them. And it's the rabbit that that Frux was drawing earlier, the really feral one. And it actually is, like, completely feral. And it wasn't, like, fucking another rabbit. It was raping it. And the other rabbits who haven't lost their minds yet are just, like, kind of terrified and almost, like, a panic, basically, breaks out. And they're, like, all, like, yelling. Because they see it as a disease that they don't want to be part of. Like, it's like trying to get away from someone with leprosy. And they are, like, basically piling on Rex and his crew and trying to, like, escape with them. And basically have to be beaten away. And in fact, like, as the elevator goes back up, like, some of them are, like, holding on and, like, trying to escape, or at least begging for their children to be, let up, and basically have to get kicked off. And as Frux sees this, she, like, is, like, horrified, too, of the whole situation. She doesn't have a very good opinion of Rex, as we're gonna see. But she's not supposed to be there, and she, skedaddles away. Meanwhile, we, have Rex, wash basically, like, go through the halls again as he's talking to his entourage until he, like, finds, like, the local bathroom and starts scrubbing his face off. And they have, like, a very frank conversation where he basically says, like, you know, that could have gone better, and then, like, someone's like, that was a shit show, sir. And he has a conversation with them. When I say frank, I mean familiar, like, frank and familiar. Like, they all know that he's full of shit. They say, like, what are you going to do when, you know, you just promised them double rations, but the rations are about to be cut again? And he basically says it doesn't fucking matter. They're going to forget about it. Like, they'll believe it because I fucking said it, and they're going to believe whatever I say. He's very arrogant about it because he's been doing this for fucking years. There's actually a bit of comedic relief there that I don't even know if I'm going to keep. Where he's, like, washing himself off and, like, scrubbing himself off, and then, like, there's just some, like, rabbit from the showers watching, and, like, what's a joke? It's something like he's, like, ordering, like, what? And then he realizes he's just, like, using the guy's uniform as a fucking towel. Anyway. So, another rabbit comes by. like looking for him. They've been looking for him, although he's kind of smelling of shit and really fucked up looking and like all mangy right now and like dripping wet. And the rabbit explains, like, you know, your presence is requested up top for the Sylphlay thing. And he's like, oh, yeah, sure, I'll be right there. And he, like, looks at his colleagues, and he's like, yeah, come on, let's eat. Basically, that's actually what he says. He's like, let's eat. Like, why the fuck not? He's got a very kind of aloof attitude to the horrors that come down here, that go down here because, that go on down here because he's so fucking used to it. I'm sorry if I'm getting incoherent. I am lightweight with alcohol, and I have no food in my stomach. But it wouldn't be a proper reading unless I was on some sort of drug.
Yep.
Okay, so we got to another chapter and another character. We're going back to Frux. Actually, we don't even see Frux right now. We aren't with any character, really. We're just looking at a room with lines of young rabbits. They're really fucking tired and yawning. Just like these fucking kids, like rows and rows of kids. It's like a school assembly. And they're just waiting. And like they're like kind of nodding off because it's early as fuck. And they're waiting in front of another group of adult rabbits. But the adult rabbits also seem like they're fucking tired and don't want to be there. No one's happy right now. And one of the adult rabbits is a rabbit named Sinx, who is talking to one of her colleagues. She is the head of the civilian government here. She's basically the president. And the colleague is saying, like, why are we waiting? I cannot fucking believe he's making us wait for this. Meanwhile, in the crowd, we're back to Vox's son. Fuck, what is his name? Rux. We're back to Rux, a teenage boy who was, like, asleep and is now awake and just, like, sleepily waiting. They all have to stand there with, like, their arms in a specific position. Almost like a salute. Oh, yeah, think of, like, an Attack on Titan, how they put it to their chest.
Okay.
Because they're waiting for this fucking assembly to start, and they can't start because Rex isn't down there. Meanwhile, Nars can hear, like, some, like, shushed, like, oh, excuse me, sorry, excuse me. And then fucking Frux arrives and, like, gets in place next to him where she's supposed to be, even though she was supposed to be there for the beginning. And they have a conversation where they're both, like, just, like, staring ahead in the position. Although some of them, Frux in particular, has to use both paws in order to move her paw into the right position. And, like, you can see that, like, Rux is kind of giving her shit, asking, like, casually, like, you know, where were you, little pearl child? And she talks about how, like, oh, I just saw some really fucked up shit. She doesn't say it in those words. But they have, like, kind of a tense conversation that's even a little funny because they're really not supposed to be talking to each other. And they repeatedly get mean looks from some of the adult rabbits because they're talking out of turn. In fact, at one point they get in trouble. And one of the adult rabbits basically, like, says something to them. And then, like, Frux apologizes. But Sinx is also watching and just kind of smiles at her. But eventually the adult rabbits decide, like, it's been too fucking long. Let's just start the assembly anyway. This is, like, a monthly assembly that they always have to discuss, like, the health of the Warren. Specifically with this upper echelon of the level. They're actually, like, almost at the very best part of the Warren. This is the civilian government for, like, this particular tier. And the idea of going and ascending up to the higher tier is used for motivation for them to work hard in the same way that the rabbits down below are told, like, hey, you can work hard and go up higher. And the rabbits down below them are told the same thing. Although really it has less to do with how hard you work and more to do with how your bloodline looks. And, like, you know, what skills you're capable of, right? Because what the fuck are you going to do if you're almost feral, living in, like, their version of, like, a nice neighborhood? Anyway, Sinx comes up and starts talking and giving a presentation. Although, and it's a presentation about generosity and, like, cooperation. And it's very clear that even though her heart is in the right place, she does not have the charisma that Rex just displayed in his presentation. And Rux, as he's, like, listening, kind of, like, quietly says, like, oh my god, like, it's this same presentation again, like, she needs new material. And then, like, Frex defends her. She's like, no, it's a good presentation. And then, like, Rux starts literally reciting exactly what she says. But there's more conversation there. They have a conversation where Frex is trying to tell him, like, hey, we really need to talk about this thing I just saw. And Rux is not really giving a shit. But that's going to come up again later. There's a side thing happening where Rex comes in. And he's kind of like, he finally, like, gets there. He's not with the group. He's kind of waiting out outside because he doesn't want to interrupt anything. Kind of like how if someone's, like, giving a play, you can, like, be on the sidelines behind the curtain and watch. And, like, the audience can't see you, but you can see them. And he got there too late, right? Oh, fuck, I forgot something. So basically, you should know that there's a bunch of fucking food in the form of rations around in piles. And they just can't get to it until this presentation is done. And they all really just want to fucking eat and get out of there. But the rations aren't particularly nice, you know, it's just like shredded vegetables, basically just piles of it. Anyway, Rex is having his own conversation with his entourage. Specifically, he's talking about things with, his secretary, Nars, but, Vox, the fucked up rabbit. It's not really fucked up, but the big asshole rabbit who was giving much shit earlier is, like, also standing there. He's kind of, like, always there listening in. Now, one thing that Rex says is that, oh, it looks like Sinx, the civilian leader, is electioneering again. And makes his own remarks about her speech. And says, like, she needs to get some more material. But as he says this, her ears kind of perk, and she turns, and she says, Rex. And he immediately, like, is surprised and faces her like a boy who's in trouble. And he says, like, what? And she says, why don't you come out and, like, explain the kinds of things I was talking about? She's giving a speech specifically because there's been reports of thievery, and she's trying to tell them that they're better than this. They're the future of their, not just their part of the city, but their entire species. And Rex does. He just kind of wings it. And, like, he's actually much funnier than her and, like, has, like, a much better response, even though he's just kind of bullshitting. Which kind of seems to piss her off a little bit. It's vaguely implied. But they finish up, and finally all the rabbits can eat. And the fucking adults can go off and have their fucking meal. And do their fucking thing. But it's, like, clear that, like, a lot of them harbor some resentment at Rex for making them fucking wait. And before they leave, there's a little bit of discussion between the adults. First of all, you know, like, Vox is, like, embarrassed that fucking Frux was talking out of turn and she's to be punished. And, like, Sinx says, you know, I'll give her a punishment, it's fine. There's some dialogue between Rex and Sinx that I'm not going to go into because it's not that big. It's just kind of character building of their relationship, and there's going to be a whole lot more of it more anyway. But before they go, Rex is going to go off. But he's stopped by Vox, who sorry, can you guys hear me? I pulled off my mic.
Yeah, we can hear you
sound better now.
He's stopped by Vox, who, like, alludes to the fact, like, hey, you know, our asset escaped. He's talking about Mutz. You know, I saw him wandering around upstairs in the council room. How did he get up there? You know, like, why is he even there? And, like, you know, like, Rex understands and then kind of says, thank you for handling this discreetly, and takes the collar and puts it in his own vest and says, we'll deal with this tonight. And then we cut to the next scene, which is Rex kind of going off on his own. He goes down, not as far underground as where Mutz is, but he's definitely going off away from everyone else. And he's looking around, making sure no one really knows he's there. And he goes to a room where he scratches at the door and says, like, hello. No one's answering. So he goes in. And as he goes in, like, it's immediately incredibly bright. He has to, like, kind of cover up his eyes and, like, blindly search around with his paws to close the door behind him. This is a greenhouse. And there is a lone rabbit. I gotta describe this place to you. It's actually pretty nice. It's got these kind of tables. It's got like beds and beds of you know, like soil and like a whole system for watering it. And it is filled to the brim with weed. It's just like a shit ton of marijuana growing all over it. I'm serious. And so Nars, there's one rabbit, a kind of elderly rabbit, who's like kind of gardening at the front, and he has these goggles on. And Rex just hears this booming voice say, you know, like, the point of a scratch of the door at the door is to be asked to be let in. And he was never like asked, he never like was told to go in. And like, Rex doesn't even give a shit. He's just like kind of like blindly wandering around searching with his paws until he finds a what do you call it? Like a valve, basically, that he turns. And the lights dim. But the lights dim because the luminous substance, that's a gas that comes in from above the vents, just like less of it comes in from above. It's called ether. We're going to encounter it a lot in this place. And there's like a brief conversation. But basically at the end of the conversation, you know, like the other rabbit, Nars, pulls off his goggles and kind of smiles, and like there's some dialogue there, but it's very clear that they're friends and they're just overly familiar with each other like everyone else. But one thing you should notice, or one thing you're gonna notice, is how many of the rabbits are really fucking old compared to Rex. Even though he's like supposed to be kind of like the head of the of the military, he seems like he's much younger than everyone else. Like, he's, like, in his 20s, and everyone else is, like, in their 60s. So we cut to them, and they're sitting down. They're sitting on these, like, cushions. Kind of think of what, like, sometimes people in India sit down and kind of, like, chill on cushions. And they're having tea. Fuck, I hope I can remember all the details in this scene, because it's actually important. And they're having a conversation, a very relaxed conversation, as Nars serves tea to Rex, and they talk. And they talk specifically about the civilian government. And one thing that becomes very clear ahead of time is that, I mean, like, first of all, you should see, like, Rex's attitude, because Nars is talking about something, and, like, Rex is already digging through his drawer, trying to find a pipe. And at one point, like, he says something and kind of, like, says, oh, yeah, I made some fresh clippings lately. And then, like, Rex is already just, like, smoking. He says, oh, by all means, you know, like, treat yourself, sarcastically. The reason they have this weed here is actually because it's, like, what they have as a painkiller. They're using it as a medication. One of the few medications they can actually grow. Or at least that's, like, something that Nars alludes to. You're not sure quite how serious he is, but it's implied that they're doing this when normally you would only ever grow food in these places, because they justified it in terms of, well, we need some sort of painkiller. They have a conversation that's kind of laid back, but there's a tension in the air. And fuck, I wish I could remember the details right now. I need to go back to my notes. It's like a very decently written scene that only has a few parts that I need to really improve. There's a few plot holes we'll talk about later. But Nars alludes to the fact that he's basically leaking information to Rex that he's not supposed to leak. Rex runs the military. Nars is on the council for the civilian government. And if they were discovered having this conversation, then they would probably both be executed. Or at least he alludes to, you know, maybe they just kill me. And then Rex smiles and says, oh, well, you know, that's my job. Because he is, like, the guy who's, like, runs the military. Fuck, there's so much subtlety in this scene. I don't know, like, how much I should describe. Their dialogue really says a lot about them and their relationship. And specifically, their mutual distrust of some other members of the council. The council which Sinks runs. They reference some disturbing information. Like, the conversation's pretty chill. They talk about how, like, oh, you know, well, I heard that you had an encounter with the proles earlier today. That's something that we talked about. Fuck, I should clarify that this scene comes after a scene that we didn't see, where, like, they go off on their own. Fucking Rex leaves to do his thing, and then, like, the council leave to do their thing and have their morning meeting. And then, now they're having, Rex and Nars are having this conversation on their own. So Rex, or Nars just had a morning meeting with all the other rabbits. And he talks about how, like, the whole thing that happened with Rex and the proles was mentioned, which Rex is really kind of upset about, although he doesn't show it much. He's annoyed, because, how the fuck did they even, like, know that so quickly? He starts, like, thinking that maybe someone's leaking information about me. But that's just kind of, like, hinted at. He doesn't actually say it out loud. But you start to see what his thought process is later in the story. And Rex, again, says, like, you know, like, he basically doesn't even fucking give a shit. He knows, like, he's not gonna get really in trouble for this. And he feels like it's good for the proles to have more interactions with, you know, the people up above. Fuck, I'm getting progressively drunk.
He feels it's healthy for them.
Yeah. Well, he doesn't quite put it like that. Fuck, dude. Say as I sip more beer. You know, the thing is, I'm realizing as I say this just how many details I've forgotten about this fucking story. Thank God I have this shit written down. Because, like, there's quite a bit of the scene that I'm like, oh shit, I forgot that that was part of the scene. There's all these layers and details. For example, well, one thing that comes up is that, I'm not gonna, like, get into it. The whole meat and juice of the scene is that, one of the most disturbing things that they had a conversation about is the fact that the foxes are pulling out of this area. And, that just kind of makes Rex go quiet. And then he says, well, that makes sense. Foxes are clever. Oh, fuck! I did forget something. Oh, god damn it.
Can you give more context?
Yes, yes. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm pretty drunk right now because I never drink. Look, here's the thing. One thing that was discussed at this council meeting is the fact that the Deadwood is, like, encroaching on their territory more and more and more. And it's getting, like, dangerously close. And it has been coming this way for a long fucking time. And then Rex says, oh, well, you know, we knew this day would come. Hopefully the council is just going to listen to my suggestion. They really have no other choice but to follow my plan for dealing with this. And then Nars says, basically that's great, except that the foxes have already decided to move out. And then, you know, then he has this dialogue, like he says, basically all he has to say is, like, that makes sense. Foxes are clever. And then Nars says, well, really? Foxes are clever. That's your response to the fact that we're all going to starve to death. You say basically what they establish in the scene is that they get a lot of their food through trade with the foxes, which is funny because Rex was just demonizing the foxes to the proles. But apparently, even though the proles don't know about this, the foxes are their only remaining trading partners in this area. They give them something and they get back food that feeds a lot of them. And if the foxes move out, they're basically going to starve to death. But Rex immediately...
The foxes the reason for the missing children?
No. The missing children involve things like Frux, who was literally just, like, plucked out because she's just too smart to be down there.
Okay.
Yeah. They're not selling, like, children to the foxes.
Alrighty. I thought they were eating some of the rabbits.
Well, why would they eat children, though?
I don't know.
More tender.
Yeah, you know, actually, that is what's happening, but it's not with the children, and I just spoiled, like, a bunch of it, but hey, like, this is, like, a description of the story. Yes, okay. You learn later on that in order to keep themselves alive, because they just don't have enough room to grow all the food that they need, and that there are just so many of them that they feed a part of their population to the foxes in order to get goods that they can use to sustain the rest of the population. You're not supposed to realize that until much later in the story, and the morality about it is, like, very ambiguous at that point for reasons you'll find out.
I mean, but it just kind of makes sense, right?
What's that?
It just kind of makes sense for them to do that. They have an issue, and foxes in nature solve it, right?
Yeah. But the idea is that they're supposedly serving their feral population, right? Like the ones that are just animals. But yeah. We're going to get into that later. Anyway, my point is it's got a lot more nuance than you think. And again, the audience isn't supposed to know that right now. But Rex seems like very disturbed by this news. And almost like trying to convince himself, he says, you know, like the council is just going to have to follow our plan sooner. Like he seems like he has an idea of what he wants to do. And then Lars just says, like, he hopes that Rex is right. Oh, fuck. Okay, so let me go back. I knew I was forgetting shit. One important thing I wanted to mention is the way that Rex just reacts to the idea of, like, he's not supposed to be interacting with, like, the proles in this way. Because when Nars says that, you know, he says, like, the council has, like, heard reports that, like, you know, like, there's been a lot of violence, just, like, acts of violence and stuff with the proles. And he mentions all these incidents in these districts and, like, you know. Rex basically says, oh, we took care of that. When he says we took care of that, he basically means he, like, kidnapped and tortured and killed people in order to root out any sort of resistance. Like, I haven't really been mentioning it right now, but it's clear from their dialogue that, like, I mean, it's very implied from their dialogue that, like, Rex is actually pretty fucking brutal. And you're going to see that he's actually pretty fucking brutal. And, you know, like, Nars says, oh, well, we've been hearing reports of unrest. I think the term I use, it's not unrest, but he basically says discontent from, you know, this district and this district too. And then Rex is like, we live in a fucking hole in the ground. No one's content. You know, just let me handle the proles. And the conversation turns to this thing with the Deadwood. And then, like, they kind of, like, change the mood because no one really wants to talk about how fucked up the situation is. And it turns into complaining about Sinks and complaining. Like, yeah, Rex is like, oh, God, did you hear her fucking her speech? And Nars was like, yeah, she needs some new material. And then Rex says, like, did you hear what it's about? And he says, cooperation. Or, fuck, was it cooperation? It was something. It was basically something like cooperation. And Rex goes on this kind of tirade about how he's the most fucking, or generosity, he's the most cooperative, generous rabbit in this fucking warren. And, like, you know, no one fucking appreciates that fact that he basically keeps it all together. But through this dialogue, which is almost kind of less about what he's saying and more about the way he's saying it and his character, Nars says, like, and he agrees, like, he doesn't really like Sinks either, but he has his own reasons for that. He does mention that, oh, you know, I heard that you and she's called the executive, I think, were once in there, like, you know, were once, like, married or, like, in a deep relationship. And, like, Rex is like, oh, you heard that, huh? Which is, like, kind of funny to him because they've been here for so long that everyone fucking knows that. And he tries to kind of, Nars is trying to pry a little bit and says, like, so what didn't work out between you two? And he says, like, oh, well, you know. Fuck, what does he say? He says, like, kind of like, oh, well, that's because Sinks has the personality of a lobster. And then Nars is, like, kind of nodding along and then, like, has never seen a lobster, doesn't really know what it is. He's like, those are water creatures, right? He's like, what, are you joking? And then he's like, oh, I'm sorry, I forgot that you've kind of lived here since you were really young. Yes, they live underwater. They're sea creatures. It gets into this weird dialogue about, like, whether or not lobsters actually have poetry or society and stuff. And in the end, there's, like, a bit of humor where, like, we realize that, like, Rex has just been smoking on the pipe the entire time. And Nars asks, like, hey, are you planning to share? And he basically says, just wait your turn. After having this whole dialogue about being so generous. Fuck, dude. I'm sorry I'm giving such a bad description of this chapter. Ugh.
Say that every time about everything.
Dude, this is fucking dude, if you fucking read it, you'd be like, oh, this is like half decent. Me trying to describe it sounds fucking horrible. Okay. So, I know we haven't talked about Mutz very much. there's like a few more scenes and then we'll get to him and then I'll end the podcast thing for now. We cut back to Frux, who is basically brought to detention. She thinks she's going to go see an adult to be scolded, and she actually sees Sinx. Like, and this is like basically the president of their society. And it's clear from their dialogue that even though she's in trouble, Sinx doesn't really give a shit. Sinx says, like, oh yeah, you know, I'm supposed to punish you. And like Rex or fucking Frux is just kind of has her ears down. And then Sinx is like smiling, says, I'll make it horrible or something like that. And then like Frux smiles. It's clear like they're very fond of each other. And that Sinx has a particular interest in Frux for some reason. But Frux doesn't really have a very good relationship with her own adoptive dad, who is Vox, who is kind of an asshole. And really owes a lot to Sinx because it was Sinx who pulled her from the lower level of the Warren from all the other proles, because she's different from all the other proles. She seems like she's a lot smarter. And they have a conversation, and the conversation is mostly a way for me to characterize Sinx and her own like view and her own kind of personality and justifications for doing the things she does. And it seems like she really believes in, like, you know, she talks about her speech and she talks about, we can't allow thievery because, like, we really are like the last hope for our species. And Frux follows her to a library where, which Frux loves reading and loves books and is excited to be here because this isn't a place that normally she goes or is allowed to go. It's for adults. But Sinx likes to pull her books from here. And Sinx says, like, hey, you know, like, help me find a new book. And, like, Frux is amazed to discover that she's almost read everything in this fucking library. The only section she hasn't gone through yet is the Rosewater section. And they start, like, going through books as they have dialogue. And then there's some kind of funny dialogue here where, like, Frux will recommend something and then, like, have a response on it. She's like, oh, what about this one, To Kill a Mockingbird? And Sinx is like, oh, that's a good book. I don't think it's what you think it is. And she says, yeah, it's probably not a fan of murder mysteries anyway, and puts it away. And the conversation is more about the Warren as a whole. And, like, the justifications for the way things are. And basically, like, who these two characters are. I don't want to get into it because it's kind of just, like, them saying things that aren't really that important, but their reactions to each other are what matter. At one point, however, they come across the book Wireship Down. And then Frux admits she's never read it, and then Sinx is like, oh, you have to read it. It's a Rosewater classic. It's like, it got so much to do with our society now. You have to read Wireship Down. And then, like, Frux talks about what she's heard of it. Like, aren't all of the animals in that feral? And, like, you know, oh, fuck, actually, that's in a future scene. But she's given this book Wireship Down to read, and they talk about how I have that in the dinner scene. Okay, yeah. So what you need to know about this chapter is, or this scene, is that she's given Wireship Down, and she has it as a book now. And also, as kind of a, like, oh yeah, I forgot, Sinx explains what her punishment for Frux is going to be for talking out of turn. And it's clear, like, we don't hear what it is, but, like, from Frux's reaction, she's, like, super fucking excited, and this isn't a punishment at all. Okay. So we cut back to Vox, who is actually kind of sneaking around, it seems. It's vaguely implied. If you reread it in retrospect, you're like, oh, shit, that's what he's doing. He's returning from something. And he enters Rex's office again. And Rex is kind of surprised. He's like, oh, you know, I didn't think you'd be here this early. And then, like, Frux, no one else is there. Frux is like, oh, well, you know, I want to take a shift. Or, I mean, Fox. Fox is like, I want to take a shift. And what Rex is doing at his table is he's repairing the collar that Mutz wears, which Vox notices and kind of disturbs him, but he doesn't say anything about it. And as Rex is doing this, he seems quite cheerful, like he always is. But he does mention that they're going to have to do another trade-off today. And he wants Vox to supervise it. And Vox agrees. And they have a dialogue. Fucking Nars arrives, and they have a group dialogue about the fact that the foxes are going to leave soon. And this might be their very last shipment. And they talk about, like, the only thing left to do is to leave the city. Like, everyone. An exodus of the rabbits from Antioch. And whether or not they can, whether or not they can take all the proles with them, how they're going to do it. It's, like, very high level, but it's something they've been planning for a long time. And they come to the conclusion, like, at the end of this conversation that's, like, pretty serious, someone says, like, hey, if we're going to try to do that, we need to open the gate, and we're going to need the asset to do that. And then, like, Rex nods and looks at Vox and says, I want to see him. And we cut to them in an elevator going down. Fuck! Okay, I fucked up.
I fucked up. Okay.
There's actually a scene before this. So I screwed up two different scenes. All right, listen. Fuck, maybe I just don't have... There's a scene. I don't know if it's before or after this. I'll have to remember. I think it must be before this because this is the last part of the chapter, but maybe it's in a different chapter where they have the trade-off with the foxes. And it's like very creepy because it's basically at night and they're on the surface, which we don't see much of. And Vox is standing there kind of in the cold with all these crates. And these crates are actually being pulled by these kind of mechanical animal-like machines. I'll show you some reference art of them. They're kind of creepy and cool that were used in a military context, which they still have. And he's just waiting there for to make this trade-off with a few other rabbits. And you don't actually even get to see the foxes. You just get to see their eyes shining in the darkness as they, like, slowly approach. But anyway, so after that conversation, we cut to... Just assume that that happens at some point. Maybe I'll remember where I put it later. We cut to just Rex and just Vox as they're going down this lift. Discussing about how, like, you know, Vox is talking about what he saw, and when he discovered Mutz, Mutz was just standing there staring at nothing for like 15 minutes until Vox finally approached and yelled at him. He was just like almost in a trance. And they talk about, you know, like whether or not he saw something that's important to them. Ah, fuck! I forgot another fucking thing. At the very fucking beginning of the chapter, when we're with Mutz, god damn it! When we're with Mutz, at the beginning of the chapter, one of the things that we mentioned from Mutt's perspective is, like, quite often, people would come down, other rabbits, adult rabbits, and talk to him about his dreams. They would ask him all these questions about his dreams. And some of them would thank him. And some of them would say he was full of shit. And, you know, like, he's just a deluded person. But they all seem very interested in his dreams. However, over time, they've come less and less until now they hardly come at all. And the only one that still comes around, really, right... now is the warden, which is who he has, like, a huge relationship with. And, like, you know, like, he really cares about the warden. He talks about how, like, you know, the warden does all these things. Ugh, fuck, dude, I should just show you the fucking chapter, because there's some really good dialogue in there. Anyway, or lines. Fucking Rex and Vox are having a conversation. And they talk about, like, hey, you know, how the fuck did Mutz even escape and get up here? You know, like, this lift is never supposed to go down, so why was it down there? You know, why was it down there to begin with? And they have dialogue where Vox admits, like, he doesn't want Rex going down there on his own, because it's not safe. And Rex says, like, well, come on, he's just a child. Fuck, I'm doing a bad job of doing this. So remember when I said that, like, calling someone, like, a wolf or something was an insult? One of, like, the horrible things you can call someone, especially if they're, like, really feral, is wolf spawn. Which is, like, how he sometimes refers to Mutz Vox. Saying, yeah, he's a wolf spawn child. And then, like, Rex is not. Don't call him that. But it's like clear that like Voss is explaining like he doesn't really want. He doesn't really think like, you know, they can trust Mutz or that they should keep Mutz around. But Rex basically says like it's fine. You know, like I'm fine. Just go back up top. Not in those words. Like, but basically, that's like the point of their conversation. And he leaves and he goes to visit Mutz. And he opens the door. And he actually has like a satchel with him too of stuff. And then as soon as he opens the door, the Mutz yells at him, "Go away." Like Mutz is angry. And he says, "No, I'm not going to go away. I'll be here if I want." Oh, fuck. Actually, he says, like, keep it off because Mutz or Vox, so many names. Rex reaches for the light, basically, by turning the valve. And then, like, he turns it anyway. And then, like, Rex or Mutz is just hiding in the corner, upset. And upset because, like, you know, like, Vox, like, threw him around. And they have a conversation. And it's clear that, like, you know, like, Mutz is just kind of like a traumatized child. But, starting to warm up because like Rex is there and like Rex is the warden he's been talking about. He refers to Rex as warden. And like by the end of this conversation they have is like super excited and happy that Rex is there. Even though there's basically like a gate, it's basically like a prison cell, right? There's like fucking bars and shit separating them. But they have a conversation. They talk about, like, Mutz's dream and, what, like, what Mutz saw and how Mutz got out. And Mutz isn't really sure how he got out. And it seems to bother Rex, although Rex claims it doesn't bother him. And the conversation changes. Rex bought a bunch of new books. And, like, once he turns on the lights all the way, like, you can see that, like, there's all these toys and shit, like, laying around. Things that he has given Mutz. And he brought a new book and he's reading this book and, or he starts reading it and he's like very laid back. It's like, he's talking to like his child or something, or like a grandchild. And like Mutz is like super excited to just like hear this new book. And as they're talking, like we cut back to outside of the door where, Vox has just lingered there instead of going up. And it's just like listening to them interact and just like how, familiar they are. And is, like, very disturbed by this. And, like, that's the end of that series of chapters. We cut back to the wolves now. But I think that's a good time to wrap it up for this session.
Yeah.
Any questions or comments or anything?
You introduced a lot of new names there.
Fucking no. Like, this is over four chapters, all right? It's not supposed to be this fucking bad.
And the problem is they're kind of very similar sounding names sometimes.
Yeah,
that's because they all have like a very maybe I should change this. There's a specific naming convention with the rabbits. You'll notice that the names all end in X or S because they're Lapine names. There's nothing
wrong with that. It's just getting this all at the same time.
Yeah.
Well, if you have any questions, I can answer them now.
Let's just go over the characters one more time.
Yeah, sure.
To solidify them in my head. So the prisoner, that was Mutz, right?
Yeah.
The warden was Vox?
No, Rex. Rex. Rex was, is was the Rex. Leader of the military.
Okay, and Vox was the one who found him.
And, like, threw him in and is, like, very second in command and is kind of an asshole.
Okay. What was the daughter's name again?
Frux. Although she's adopted. She's actually from the lower proles Frux. And was basically assigned to Vox.
And she is the daughter of Vox.
Though she's not literally the daughter of Vox. He just is her caretaker. But yeah, and she lives with Vox.
Okay. And the brother, the son?
Rux.
Is Rux.
Yeah, and he's actually the biological son of Vox. What you're going to find out is, like, even though it's the military, they all have kids. Yeah. Although their wives are never actually shown for some reason. Which becomes a plot point later on.
They're rabbits. Of course they have kids.
No, they only have a few kids, actually.
Is there any characters I'm missing?
Yeah. Okay. So.
Oh, the one that was smoking in the greenhouse.
Yeah. Fuck. I want. God, dude. Even I fucking forgot. I want to say that's Nars, but Nars isn't. Nars is the fucking secretary. Holy shit! What did I name him? I said it earlier. I forgot. Anyway, yeah, no, he's the member of the civilian council who's leaking information to Rex and really isn't supposed to be.
Okay.
And they were both talking about the leader of the civilian government, which is Synx, S-Y-N-X, the one who pulled Frux out from the lower layers. I know, right? There's so many new names. What you're going to understand about this story arc eventually is it basically comes down to the conflict between Rex and Synx, who have very different views of where their society should go, and also the interactions between what is basically their kids, which is Mutz and Frux. Because the Mutz and Frux meet each other and like interact and kind of form like a friendship, even though their parent figures are like becoming enemies. And like things are getting dangerous.
Okay. Interesting.
Hmm. All right. Anything else? And then we can watch the X-Files.
Nope.
So it seems like you should definitely read you should definitely reread what you've written before.
I know.
We do the
fucking next. No. No, dude, do you know how fucking much it is and how widely spread out it is? No, I cannot do that. Let's just get this done. If I skip something, it's fucking fine. It's not going to be that important. Yeah. Like, all the important plot points I know, like, that would take so fucking long. I'm going to do it eventually. But, you know, I'm recording these sessions so I can get people interested in the basic story and give them an outline. You know, like, the things I'm forgetting are bits of dialogue that are, like, good. Or, like, you know, like, details that are good and part of the story. But, like, given how big the story is and how big... Like, how broad the story arcs are, like, there's even if I mention them, they'd be too much to mention, right? I'm already probably going into too much detail. Waffle knows what I'm talking about. And the,
part of the purpose of this is to, like, put these things in a mildly coherent order and, like, see where there's plot problems, like, when you list everything out together, that kind of thing.
It's like you have to understand we're like what like 6 to 8 chapters in right now, and we are in like a very small fraction of the story so far. It's fucking
yeah. Big. This is basically all intro almost. Like we're still just like putting all the pieces on the board.
Yeah. And like remember, there's two other separate storylines we haven't even introduced yet that I purposely don't introduce until later because it would just be too fucking much even as a reader going over chapters. So for the first like several chapter clusters, it's just going to be the wolves and the rabbits, and like these two plot lines actually seem to converge or are going to converge at one point, which I don't want to spoil too much right now, but yeah. Well, the next time we talk, we're going to go back to the wolves, and you can have totally forgotten about them.
What's so great about this burrow that the rabbits are living in it and not up on the surface just eating the grass and plants that are free?
So, wait, you're going to learn, actually, in an upcoming scene, because the way that Frux got punished is she's actually being allowed to go to the surface to do some maintenance. Which she is super excited about, although her brother is like, oh, fuck, why are we going on the fucking surface? It's cold and it's horrible. They basically live in, like, rabid Antarctica. The place they live in is actually called Alaska, but it's not, like, our Alaska. Alaska to them is just, like, a foreign fucking fantasy place in the same way we call something Avalon. They live in this frigid fucking nowhere. And they're only there because they escaped basically the destruction of their city, and they kind of like co-opted what was ultimately a prison. I'll fucking explain it right now. So what we learn is that, there was this actually nice rabbit city that these creatures escaped from, and there was this basically madhouse asylum for the rabbits that had like started to go feral. To like treat and kind of isolate them, that basically the remaining civilian government and military kind of came into and then just co-opted. But all the feral rabbits were still there and basically just like started ruling, right? This is like the last beacon of rabbit civilization. In this universe, they talked about a gate earlier, all right? In this universe, there are gates. There are physical, like, gates. They're mechanical that allow people to travel really great distances. But in order to open them and use them, only certain people can open and use them, which becomes a plot point later on that I don't want to get into right now. It's definitely going to come up.
So that's why they call Mutts the asset.
Yeah, exactly.
I see.
Even though they don't want him around.
If you're way ahead of the game.
That was my guess. The word asset, yeah.
Are they ahead of the game, or do they not even know where the game starts, Waffle?
Well, they are,
you've heard the story, so you know all the weird twists and turns.
They think they're ahead of the game. Yeah. There's like eight twists beyond that. But anyway.
It's five D chess.
But anyway, and also, they don't live on the surface because the surface is fucking horrific and is forests that like move and breathe. And
you have to keep in mind that the Deadwood is fucking getting closer and closer. And like, there's nothing fucking out there. In fact, in the upcoming chapter, when we get back to the rabbits and they explore the surface, you can see that there used to kind of be a city up here that has long since been abandoned. Plus, you know, like, they want to keep the proles in control. And, like, you know, like, so there's nothing on the surface. It's a fucking frozen wasteland. And that's why they grow all their food underground where it's warm.
And, you really don't want to be on the surface in general, no matter what the temperature is.
Yeah, at least in this part of the world. But, like, Waffle, you have to understand, like, the Deadwood still hasn't arrived yet, right? So... it's just coming.
Oh, yeah, it's true.
Yeah. You'll see, though. You'll see what he's talking about. All right, any other questions? You know what? The best fucking... the biggest compliment I have to this story right now is that I spent, like, what was it? Like, 3 weeks of spending multiple hours a
day
telling you every fucking night, most nights, about this fucking story, and you listen to the whole goddamn thing, and now you're back for more. You're just going to listen to the whole thing over again, Waffle. What a fucking compliment. Okay. All right, I'm getting the recording now. Done.